My Govan, and welcome to the Tolkien Lore Channel. I'm the Tolkien Geek, and recently my wife was in a Facebook group, which she has now left because of the annoyances, but she was scrolling along, and there was somebody who posted a question about the Lord of the Rings. And specifically, the question had to do with whether it was basically fit for, let's say, Christian consumption, because the group itself was Christian, among other things, but apparently, this one particular person's husband said something about it being basically the same as Harry Potter. It's a bunch of witchcraft and all that stuff, and so, you know, not okay. That's not exactly what was said. I'm just kind of phrasing it that way because it is a common way of putting it, but the person did directly compare it to Harry Potter. And this is an old, really mistaken idea that's been around for a long time, and I would have thought had mostly been killed off by now, but apparently there are still people that haven't quite gotten over this. And there are a number of responses that you could make to this kind of claim. The easy one is to say that, well, Tolkien himself was a Christian, and therefore, like, he's not going to write anything that's anti-Christian. The problem with that approach, and the reason why it won't necessarily work with the kind of people who make this claim, is the people who tend to make that kind of argument tend to be the type of, let's say, American Protestant evangelical who believe some rather strange things about Catholics. And since Tolkien himself was a Catholic, pointing out that Tolkien was a Catholic and therefore not going to be anti-Christian is not necessarily the best route to go. It nevertheless, it should be a decent argument. It's just that there are a lot of people in American Protestantism that are so ignorant of Catholicism that they really aren't going to be convinced by anything that you can say along those lines. You can also kind of easily point out that Gandalf, say, you know, the one good guy who does something like real magic in the story, leaving aside Galadriel, because Galadriel is, we'll get to her in a little bit, but it's kind of a different case. Gandalf is the one person in the good guy camp who really does something magical. And it's easy to point out that, you know, Gandalf is not a wizard in the sense that the Bible uses the term wizard. He's a wizard in a completely different sense. And what he really is an incarnated angelic being who has power of his own. It's not magic in that sense. The Christian idea of magic, of course, being that a person is in league with a demonic spirit and therefore able to do things beyond human capability because they are using the power of an evil spirit to do things that they might not otherwise be able to do. That's not what Gandalf is doing, obviously. And we know this from the Silmarillion, that what Gandalf is not a human with magical powers. He is, in fact, a spirit of the good side who has powers of his own. Now, that also is a slightly problematic argument to make, not so much because it's going to run into serious problems, but if you've never read the Silmarillion, or the person making the claim hasn't read the Silmarillion, that's not going to be the easiest thing to prove, and you're not going to get them to read the Silmarillion to find this out, and they may not be all that open-minded. Now, a person who makes this kind of claim may not be all that open-minded in the first place, so a lot of this may be a moot point, but what I want to do in the rest of this video is point out things within the Lord of the Rings itself that already point us to the direction of this is not really the kind of thing that these kinds of people are complaining about when they say this kind of stuff, because there's plenty in the book. It's subtle, but it's definitely there. Now, there's a couple of things in the background, of course, that we can talk about. There are, let's say, I've done a video before on the idea that Tolkien himself mentioned in a letter about the work being a fundamentally religious and Catholic work. And you can look at the stuff that he talks about in the book that, you know, you can really, if you pay attention, get the theme that this is a very Christian-founded type of story. It's not the same as Christianity, because there's nothing in Christianity that says angels can go around just starting fires, you know, with a staff, right? That's not a thing in Christianity. That's not to say that angels couldn't do that. We don't really have much evidence one way or the other from much of any, you know, authoritative Christian sources on this. So we don't know exactly what angels could or couldn't do necessarily, but the point is, if we're going to look at it from this perspective, we want to have some idea of how does it fit within that Christian framework. The themes are certainly Christian. That by itself gets you a little bit of traction because it points in the direction of whoever is writing this story is doing it from the perspective of somebody who believes in Christianity or something very like Christianity at any rate. It doesn't prove everything, though, because there's a lot of, let's say, very Christian elements to a lot of stories that are not necessarily intentionally written from that kind of a framework. And, you know, to use Harry Potter as an example, I'm not saying Harry Potter is off limits because it's witchcraft, because Harry Potter is clearly also a fantasy story. J.K. Rowling is not writing about a bunch of kids who are in league with demonic spirits and therefore able to do magic. It's a fantasy version of our own world where magic is a thing that some people can do. And even if you wanted to put Lord of the Rings in that category, which it's really not, you could, you know, sort of make the argument that, okay, so it's not exactly our world, but what's wrong with imagining a fantasy world where some of these things are okay? I'd really be curious to think, to find out, let's say, how many people who would make this complaint about Lord of the Rings would make a similar complaint about Star Wars. Because Star Wars is effectively a story about magic. It's just in a galaxy far, far away a long time ago. Because the Force is just magic. That's really all it is. Now, of course, George Lucas tried to scientify that whole idea with midichlorians in the prequel trilogy, but leaving that aside, the point is there are plenty of stories out there where there is a fantastic element at play that doesn't rise to the level of actually being or promoting anything like what the Bible would condemn as witchcraft or magic or whatever you want to call it. So that's, you know, that's one thing. You could look at the Christian themes within the story itself, and that's, you know, at least hopefully softens up the target of, you know, the argument here so that they can recognize that, you know, the person writing The Lord of the Rings is not anti-Christian, hopefully. Another thing that you can point out is that, you know, gets you a little bit of the way is the fact that in the story itself, we have little hints of the idea that the bad guys are definitely the ones who use bad magic, if you want to call it that. So there's several things that we could point to for this. One of them is Sauron being the necromancer. The Bible specifically condemns necromancy. I forget exactly the passage. Who cares what specific verse reference? I mean, if you want to find out, you can find out. But necromancy is specifically condemned. Necromancy is, for those of you who are not really familiar with what it means and just know the term necromancer is like a, ooh, that's kind of a scary term. Necromancy is the practice of using the dead or communicating with the dead. Necro means dead. So it's talking about communicating with the dead or using the dead in some way magically. So the Sauron being the necromancer is already, like, we're putting him in the bad guy camp, and so necromancy is in the bad guy camp. We've also got the Witch King of Angmar, right? The Witch King of Angmar is the leader of the Nazgul. It's interesting that he is called the Witch King. He's not obviously a female, which, you know, typically in our modern connotations, we think of witches being female, and maybe a warlock would be maybe the male term that you would associate with a male witch. But in this case, he's called the Witch King of Angmar. Witchcraft being a bad thing, he is a bad guy. Again, we're putting that in that camp. The only characters in the story that really use magic that aren't bad are Gandalf and Galadriel, as I mentioned earlier. Gandalf is extremely reluctant to use magic. He almost never does it except in extreme necessity. And there are magical items, or what seem to be magical items, in the story. For example, the Barrow Blades seem to have some, at least semi-magical properties about them, which is kind of complicated because Tolkien in some of his writings indicate that men don't have magic and therefore they can't really do that, but yet in the book it says that they're wound about with spells for the Bane of Mordor or Angmar, I forget which. Now you could take that as being just another one of Tolkien's uses of older English meanings of words, because if you think about it, spells really just means words in the old sense of that word. Spell literally just means, and this is like if you look at the word gospel, it's good spell. In Old English, that's just good news or good word. So spell doesn't necessarily mean magic. So the Barrow Blade isn't necessarily a magical item, but to the, let's say, unsavvy reader, it certainly looks like that when you get the description of what happens when Merry stabs the Witch King, because it seems to imply there are magical properties. Ignoring that for a moment, the magical items and whatnot, the two characters who use magic are Gandalf and Galadriel. Galadriel is an interesting case because, unlike Gandalf, who is extremely reluctant to use any kind of magic, Galadriel is, you know, she uses the mirror of Galadriel, and Sam specifically says, "Is this elf magic?" Or I don't think he actually says that. Galadriel actually says, "This is what you would call elf magic." But then she immediately follows that up with, "I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that, because you use the same word to describe the arts of the enemy." So Galadriel is here telling us, without saying it explicitly, that there are at least two different kinds of what we would call magic in this world. Some are okay, and some are definitely not. And that ought it by itself to give us a pretty good hint that whatever is going on the good side is not necessarily the kind of magic that would be condemned from a biblical or Christian point of view. Again, these things are kind of subtle. You have to pick up on them and really pay attention to the story to get it, but they are there. Another thing, going back to Gandalf, is that in the story, after he is Gandalf the White, and then he actually, you know, goes to Minas Tirith and all this stuff, he does a few things that are magical. Like he makes fire a couple times before he ends up with the Balrog going, you know, to the depths of Moria. But when he comes back, he also does a few seemingly magical things. There's his encounter with Théoden, which I've talked about in a couple of videos. There's the time when he's at Minas Tirith and he lifts his hand and a white shaft of light goes out, and he uses that to kind of get the Nazgul off the backs of Faramir and his men who are retreating from Osgiliath. And then you've got another one that's particularly interesting for this discussion, because when Denethor is trying to burn himself and Faramir alive, Gandalf goes and just picks up Faramir, basically one-handed, and carries him down on his own. And it specifically says in the text that in doing so, he is revealing the power that is in him. In other words, Gandalf is something else. There's something going on about Gandalf that is not just human. And the fact that he's already been resurrected once should tell us something along those lines anyway. Plus the fact that Pippin, earlier in the story, has already wondered, what is Gandalf? Who is he? Where'd he come from? Where's he going? How old is he? Like, what is this guy? Because we already know, just from the story itself, without even looking at the appendices, which tell us when Gandalf came to Middle-earth, which tells us that he's at least a couple thousand years old. All we need to know from the story itself, though, is that Gandalf has already told us in, you know, combining information from The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, that he was around when Thrain was captured by Sauron. And we know that is a long time ago. He's way old. He's not just a man, clearly. Now, you could, I suppose, if you were going to be really stubborn and try to keep up the argument, you could say, well, he's only that old because he's using dark magic to prolong his life. Okay, well, again, some people are invincibly ignorant, and you're never going to change their mind. That's whatever. But the point being here, Gandalf is not human. And the story kind of makes that fairly clear. And there's hints everywhere about this. It's not clear if you don't read the Silmarillion what exactly he is, because, you know, you just don't know. You know he came from the West that is forgotten because he was called Olorin there, but what does that mean? But the point is, there are plenty of hints that give us some indication that Gandalf is not a mortal man from the normal world that we can just, whatever. Like in The Hobbit, you can imagine that's exactly what he is, because there's really no information about his background or anything. He's just a wizard, whatever that means. And for purposes of that story, Tolkien wasn't really thinking through all the things that you might come up with, in terms of thinking about it from a Christian angle, because he was just writing a fun story for his kids. That's really all he was doing. So we've got that. We've got Galadriel's comments. We've got, the Christian theming of the story. What else can we look to show, somebody who might be thinking in these lines that magic is not really the kind of magic that a, Bible-believing Christian would necessarily object to? Well, there's also the fact that if you just pay attention to the story, we get plenty of hints that there are just interesting abilities. Like, if you look at what elves can do, they do really interesting things just on their own, just because they're elves. And the existence of elves itself should tell us something about the nature of the world we're operating in. Elves are immortal. They live forever. They are not human. So we're already dealing with a situation in which we're in a world where there are things that are not following the laws of nature as we know them in our world. So you already have to make certain allowances for things. We know that there are dragons in this world. There are trolls. There are, the fact that we have all this, it's like, if you want to say that fantasy in and of itself is anti-Christian, then there's nothing really I can do for you. I mean, you're just stuck. There's nothing you can do to convince somebody like that. I have to say, there's some interesting kind of social commentary on this in the show Stranger Things. If you've watched that, you know what I'm talking about. But the main characters play Dungeons and Dragons, and of course, this kind of idea was really strong back when Dungeons and Dragons got started, and there were a lot of evangelical and probably even a broader swath of Christians who thought that that was just, something really wrong with that whole idea, the Dungeons and Dragons game and everything else. And, in the story of the show, it really doesn't help that when the kids get to high school, the club at their high school that does Dungeons and Dragons is called the Hellfire Club. I mean, talk about playing into your own enemy's hands. It's not the best approach if you want to be not treated like you're heathens. But point being, this was a really big thing 30, 40 years ago in this country. And for that reason, it's probably still around, but it was always largely a misunderstanding of what the thing is. And some of it could be that idea that fantasy is just not okay. It's like, well, my argument to somebody like that, if I was going to try to convince them, would be, well, why is fantasy not okay, but fiction is? Fiction is nothing other than just making stuff up that didn't happen in order to tell a story. Fantasy just takes that a little bit of a step further and says, what if the laws of the world that we live in were a little different? And, the line between fantasy and science fiction is kind of blurry, but there's also that whole thing. Like, again, would a person who makes this argument about Lord of the Rings say the same thing about Star Wars or any other kind of, science fiction like Star Trek, or let's use Star Trek as an example, because Star Trek doesn't have the magic of the Force, right? They still have things in there that are very different. I mean, there's alien species. If we can have elves, we can have alien species. If we can have alien species, we can have elves. There's, faster than light travel, which is, according to everything we seem to know about science, not possible. And if you want to really get strict with it, it's kind of like the old Arthur C. Clarke quote, like, any technology that is sufficiently advanced beyond our understanding is effectively just magic. If you took an iPhone back to the Middle Ages and showed them, you know, that this little device can play videos and, you know, do all the things that it can do, they'd probably accuse you of sorcery. Let's be honest. But the point being, there's a certain extent to which you can, and this goes back to the magical item problem in The Lord of the Rings, and I've talked about this in a video before, I don't remember which one, but the Palantiri, it's not clear that they're a magical item so much as something that Feanor, in some sense, made technologically to do something, and it's not clear exactly what. And you can analogize this to warp speed in Star Trek, let's say, because faster than light travel, and I get it, there are, you know, some arguments that, you know, that any kind of travel like that is not really traveling faster than light, it's actually like making a wormhole and bending space-time, whatever. But you don't get that idea in a lot of Star Trek. In most of Star Trek, what you get the idea is they're just traveling faster than light. That's the idea. So if you can't scientifically actually do that, then again, it's the same thing. It's in both cases, a technology has been discovered and used that we don't understand with our current level of science. So how is it any different, really? You know, it's the same thing, just applied in a different way. Again, the line between fantasy and science fiction is pretty blurry. The main difference seems to be the window dressing, not the substance of it. Because science fiction, by its nature, is talking about things that either can't happen scientifically, but look sciencey, or things that maybe could happen scientifically, but we just don't know how or don't know if it's even possible. There are, of course, stories that are kind of borderline science fiction that are, let's say, you know, we know that in theory something like this is possible, we just don't know how to do it yet, but, you know, we're going to use it, and that's less science fiction. It's starting to bleed into just future fiction, if you want to make up a term for it, but the overall point here is the lines between these things is so blurry that if you can get somebody to look at that, somebody who thinks that Lord of the Rings is dangerous because it's got magic and whatever, it's like, well, doesn't Star Trek effectively have magic because it does things that science says is impossible and therefore it's, you know, whatever. And, you know, maybe, you know, a Christian who you're talking to in this particular instance doesn't think Star Trek is okay either, but not for that reason, probably. It's not because it's magic. If you could get somebody to admit that, then it's like, okay, so fantasy itself is not the problem either. Because the real problem is your preconceptions about what the story is and what's in the story and what you think it is. But that's not actually what the story is, and it's not really what's going on. And then hopefully with all of that, you can kind of break through and be like, okay, now that you've admitted that fantasy is okay, you can look at all those other things I talked about before. Gandalf, the power that is in him, you know, the where he comes from, who he is, Galadriel's comments about what magic means, you know, the witchcraft and necromancy being associated with the bad guys, all this stuff, if you look at it all combined, it makes it kind of clear that what's going on here is not the kind of thing that a Bible-thumping Christian should actually object to. Now, like I said before, there probably are some people out there who just think fantasy is just bad, period, because of whatever. And you can't convince those people. If they think that fiction is okay, but fantasy and sci-fi are just off the table, then it'll be whatever. That person is just way too close-minded. But I think most people would not go all the way to that extreme. And so hopefully most people you could have a reasonable conversation with. I say that, but I think we all know that reasonable conversations are not always that easy to have. But hopefully with the points that I've laid out here, you can actually make the kind of case that you need to from just The Lord of the Rings itself, without looking at the Silmarillion, without looking at anything else, to show this is not a story about witchcraft, or, you know, except to the extent that you do have a Witch King of Angmar who's a bad guy, right? But it's not a story where the magic is happening because demonic forces are, you know, in league with humans or whatever. That's not what's going on. Gandalf is not that kind of a wizard. He's doing something that is just a native thing to him. If you could get somebody to just actually be open-minded and listen, these are the kinds of things that I would point out. And again, it is subtle. You have to actually really read the whole story and understand it and pay attention to those little details. But they're there. It's not like Tolkien is hiding it. It's just not a main focus of what he's trying to do because, first and foremost, he's trying to tell the story. That's his main goal with any of it, is I just wanted to tell a good story. That's what he says in his prologue to the second edition. It's like, it doesn't have a point except to tell a story. He's not trying to prove that fantasy can be compatible with Christianity, although he made defenses of that later on as people ask questions about it. So that's, you know, that's how I would approach it. You know, it's like, does your person really just think fantasy is just off the table altogether? You know, talk about why that's silly. And if you can get past that, bring in the details. So hopefully that approach works if you know anybody like this. If you don't know anybody like this, hopefully this was at least an interesting look at how you can actually look at just the Lord of the Rings by itself without even paying attention to the Silmarillion and all the other stuff and see, you know, the little hints that Tolkien leaves us that tell us things about the nature of his world and why it's not that kind of a thing. So I just thought that was funny because, again, like, I thought this whole idea had pretty much mostly been killed off by this point. But apparently some things never die, and stupid ideas are among the most resilient things in the world, apparently. So hope you enjoyed it one way or the other. If you did, please do give it a thumbs up, share it around, maybe share it with people who have this crazy idea. Not trying to insult anybody. Most people, I think, really just make this kind of idea, this argument, out of ignorance, really. But if you know anybody who needs to hear this, or know somebody who's dealing with somebody who needs to hear this, share it with them. Make sure you check the description below for support and social links, including, of course, the platform formerly known as Twitter, where I drop Tolkien-related trivia questions. And until the next time, I'm the Tolkien Geek, signing out for the Tolkien Lore Channel. Namarie. Thanks to all my channel supporters, especially Paul Leone, Nathan Dufour, and Robert Kindling.